Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Friday. It's October 16th, 23 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Erica Martin couldn't be with us, but sent along this recorded message.
I'm ABC 4 News meteorologist Erica Martin with your KPCW weather update. Have a great weekend. We're going to see lots of sunshine in the forecast for today, Park City. The expected high temperatures in the low 60s, overnight lows in the mid to upper 20s. So certainly a chilly night on tap. And that's going to be the trend for the next couple of nights. Now on Saturday, we're going to start off with mostly sunny skies to partly cloudy skies for the second half of your day. Temperatures in the low 60s. That's going to be the same deal for Sunday, low 60s there. We're pretty much going to stay in that range, upper 50s to low 60s for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday with overnight lows, generally speaking, in the 20s. I don't see anywhere where we're going to actually hit that freezing mark. So again, a couple of cold nights ahead. From the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm ABC 4 News meteorologist Erica Martin with your KPCW weather update. Have a great day and have a fantastic weekend.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up, checking in with Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation later on in the hour. Outgoing CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau, Bill Malone. Also the newest inductee in the Utah Tourism Hall of Fame, talking about his 20-year tenure in Park City. Utah's Division of Motor Vehicles Director Monty Roberts telling us about the vehicle registration changes and how you're not going to get a postcard to remind you to register your vehicles anymore. Finally, the CEO of Voice for Utah Children, Mo Wicke, with data of early childhood education and care, also talking about the impacts of Amendment G, which is on your election ballot this year. Stay tuned. 8:08 now, and on the phone with a trails update, Charlie from Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Things are looking pretty darn nice for fall out there. We could still stand a little bit of moisture. Seems to be plenty dusty. Just a couple of quickie things to let people know. You will see some machines out in Round Valley. We are back to work on what we call the Big Easy, which is a green level, if you will, if you follow the sea area coloring, trail that is designed to be easy to ride. It will be suitable for hand cycling, and it will also be suitable for snow biking in the wintertime. And also, so this will also be a way to keep snow bikes off of the cross-country groomed areas, just kind of separating two uses a little bit more yet again. There will be a little bit of new Nordic out there with some improvements on the barrel roll area and the Valda Road, what is fondly referred to as the Ballbuster Hill. Otherwise, pretty much it. It looks like a great weekend. Enjoy it. Once again, trails are super dusty. They do best when you are not skidding on trails, going into turns too fast. So if you can keep it reeled in a little bit for those turns, we've seen a lot of wear and tear from high use this year. So the best thing that can happen is basically we all slow down a little bit and get some moisture on those trails. That's it, Leslie. Have a great weekend.
Okay, Charlie. Thanks. KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Well, taking a look at some local news, the Park City Senior Center has been granted 501c3 nonprofit status. KPCW's Sean Higgins reports that Park City Senior Citizens Incorporated now has the ability to apply for grants and fundraise for programs.
The COVID-19 pandemic has been a rough time for everyone, but senior citizens have been hit especially hard. Not only are they the demographic most susceptible to serious complications from COVID-19, but the mental health of seniors is also a concern, with many spending long stretches in isolation away from family and friends. The Senior Center's Diane Sanchez says the move to become nonprofit allows the organization to raise funds to bring more of their traditional programs online. She hopes the move will help keep Park City's senior community together during the pandemic.
We're working very hard to keep the seniors as a community. And as you know, as it becomes winter, colder, darker, we want to still have a feeling of a place to gather and socialize and be a part of a community.
KPCW has previously reported that Park City announced a new senior center would be built on Park Avenue just across from the Park City Library and Skate Park in late June. The city plans to build affordable housing at the location of the current senior center at 1361 Woodside Avenue, but many of the community's seniors have resisted that move. Some members of the senior community have expressed frustration in the possibility the new building might not be a 24/7 space for seniors, only during what the city called traditional senior meeting times. Sanchez says the center has been the community's home for decades and serves as more than just the meeting space for the community.
The senior center has been the seniors' home now for some 44 years. So it is home, and it is the center that the seniors know. And it has the history. I mean, it's a history lesson in the making, and so many of the seniors now, Peggy Fletcher or who's who of the history of Park City. And so it is a very lovely place.
The Senior Center claims they have a valid 99-year lease with the city for the current location beginning in 1976. Park City Municipal staff were unavailable to comment on this story, but KPCW has reported the city does dispute the validity of the 99-year lease. Sanchez says there has not been much dialogue between seniors and the city since earlier this summer.
Well, there actually has been no activity between the senior and the city of late. I'd say we're in a holding pattern where we seem to be in neutral, not going anywhere. We had numerous meetings early on this year, and of course the city has quite a few irons in the fire as well. So that's where we are. We are definitely in a holding pattern.
The city has plans to break ground at the new senior center next spring with a projected completion date of fall 2021. The current senior center will remain in use until construction is complete. Park City Senior Citizens, Inc. will also be a part of this year's Live PC Give PC community nonprofit fundraiser. Live PC Give PC is organized by the Park City Community Foundation and takes place on November 6th. For more information, visit livepcgivepc.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:14. Well, after a 20-year run heading up the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau, CEO Bill Malone is retiring. His replacement, Jennifer Wesselhoff, will be taking over starting Monday. Malone was also recently inducted into the Utah Office of Tourism. He joins me now in the studio for a final time, I'm guessing. Good morning to you.
I think it's the final time. Yeah.
So today is officially the last day, huh?
Yeah. Looking forward to getting everything cleaned up and turning the office over and getting it all set up for Jennifer.
Yeah. So you said you're going to be working with her some? Or?
Yeah. I'm available for to her. We have several appointments set up over the next several weeks in terms of me introducing her to various people around the city and the county and the state. So looking forward to we've been spending a fair amount of time on the phone together for the last several weeks.
Okay, so she's found a place to live?
Yes, she did. She and her husband are renting a house.
Great. So now what for you?
I don't know. You know, I plan on being on the golf course a little bit more, and I look forward to a ski season, a skiing weekdays. Yeah, but I, you know, I'm in some conversations with some groups regarding some consulting opportunities, but I'm going to give it a little time, figure out how much I want to do and exactly what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick look then ahead at the ski season. What is it shaping up to be, or do we even know?
It's hard to tell. So there's good news out there. We watched in the last month a pretty good increase in reservations for the month of December. We're not tracking about 22% behind where we were last year for the month of December. Hard to believe that we would be kind of rubbing our hands together and going only 22% down. I mean, in previous years, we would be pulling our hair out going, what are we doing 22% down? But the fact that ski resorts like Deer Valley that has gone to selling daily lift tickets now on, you know, and I think that is going to be the trigger that makes people say, okay, I have the confidence now that I can go skiing. Now let me book my lodging. Let me book my airline. So I think it's kind of a little bit backwards than what we've done in the past. Was that was always a given. You were going to be able to ski. Now it's like get that lift ticket. If you don't have a pass, you know, season pass, get that lift ticket. And then you know you can pull all the other pieces together. So December's looking a little bit better than what it was a month ago. But, you know, January, February, March are still lagging pretty far behind where we were last year. But we have a feeling that it's going to be that close in. I mean, that's just what we saw in the summer. where people were making reservations a week out. They weren't making those reservations a month out. So I think it's going to be some of the same, that they'll be seeing where we are in terms of snow, where we are in terms of the virus, where they are in terms of the virus, and I think people will make those decisions a lot closer in than they have in the past.
And what will that mean for the budget? I mean, you don't have to oversee that anymore, but have you left Jennifer in pretty good shape?
This year, our budget was 20% reduction from last year, and we made some adjustments on that. But, yeah, that's, our transient room taxes in Summit County are primarily the biggest quarter is that first quarter, that January, February, March. So it's really going to come down to January, February, and March, what it looks like.
And then taking a look at the summer, I mean, it's still busy out there. Last weekend, I couldn't believe how many people were out on the streets. I've had two restaurants tell me they have never had better numbers for summer. This in the middle of a pandemic.
It's bizarre. We saw the month of September occupancy was equal to the month of August. And this is without any group business, any corporate meeting business or anything going on. So I think, the whole business of families traveling with children who are doing their schooling online has created a whole new freedom for people that used to say, well, school starts, we don't travel. I think we saw that in September. We saw, families out on the road traveling. So, and if you're coming from an urban area, we're a very rural kind of a place, and I think people feel comfortable here.
Yeah. So do you have any numbers, though, in terms of what the summer season's going
to be? We like to, October is still part of that summer category that we catch. But we grew in occupancy every month this summer from the previous month. And so while, April and May were pretty non-existent, June was really not very good at all. We started to see July, once Montage and Stein's and the luxury property started opening, we started seeing that occupancy go up. And it went up in July. August was higher than July. And September was equal to July, which has been unheard of.
Yeah, another thing you tracked, though, is the rate. So were the rates, did they have to come down to get people here?
Not at all. Rates actually have increased over the course of the summer from the previous year. And we think what part of that is the fact that we lost a lot of that corporate meeting business that was on the books, maybe for 2 years in advance that it was booked. And those rooms were resold at basically a higher rate than what they were originally sold at. So and that's really important because from a tax standpoint and a spending standpoint in the community, that allows us to not have to earn that back. And that's hard to earn back. We saw that in the recession where people really did deep discounting. And it takes years to get your price back up.
Well, let's talk about some of the highlights over the last 20 years. I mean, what were those highlights for you?
Wow. It's kind of a I was thinking, people who I worked with when I came to work here and was hired here. I was Vern Greco was the GM and Blaze Kerrig at the Canyons and Bob Wells and Jan Wilking. And now, people who actually came here and worked during the Olympics are people that I work with today. And so there's been a lot. It's been an exciting opportunity. But God, there's just so many things. Everything from dealing with the recession to the lawsuits. And the ski area sale and the anxiety that caused. And we've had, kind of the highs and the lows. But like any community, I think this one especially, kind of weathers those and moves on. And we kind of forget what those issues were a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of, when I was thinking back about some of the challenges we may have faced, that was certainly the cutting of the TRT, the budget, big time. I mean, you lost about 30%, I think, right? And then whether or not Park City Mountain Resort would open once it was sold to Vail Resorts. I mean, was that sale to Vail? I mean, was that a defining moment of town? I mean, did town change forever from then, from that?
I don't think we changed. I don't think the town really changed that much from that. I mean, I think the anxiety was so huge at that time. And I remember people saying, oh, you're crazy, Bill. They're not going to close. It's like, wow, you know, you're talking about people with some pretty big egos there that were doing battle with one another. And I said, you know, nothing was off the table, I think, for that standpoint. And I remember Diane Foster and I had a lot of meetings with a lot of business people in town over that period of time, trying to figure out alternative plans, kind of the what ifs. And we were facing, you know, it was fall and we were facing Christmas. And I, you know, hear stories that, you know, people in New York, that's what they were talking about, was get this solved. We have places here. We're planning on coming. And so it was very, very interesting. I'm wondering if someday if the book will be published on that one.
Yeah. And any idea what kind of growth we saw during the 20 years in terms of maybe business growth? I mean, yeah, looking from the chamber side as well as the visitation side?
Significant. You know, and it really wasn't that much, I think, over that span in residential growth. Mm-hmm. There was some, but you know, the growth, I think, occurred in the second home, you know, market. The population hasn't really dramatically changed in those 20 years, but the amount of second home and the amount of business opportunity that has developed over that time, people taking that risk, and as we kind of became known, the accessibility factor became more and more important in people's lives, and we became a place that started attracting international guests. Those opportunities grew, and then people are creative, and they figure out ways to start businesses. And some of those, you kind of, you know, I'm extremely conservative in some of those areas where I scratch my head and go, man, I'm not sure I would risk that. And they take those risks, and they have success, and they become very successful businesses in town. You know, I recall back even being pretty skeptical about the concept of a hospital in the community. It's like, what do we need a hospital for? We have great medical care, you know, down the hill. And to watch that grow and have two additions, you know, onto it in that time, and how popular and how important it is to the community now. And I think the pride that the community has in a hospital there, that's something that I really didn't, maybe didn't recognize at that time. So it's great to be able to look back and admit that you were wrong on these things, but it, wrong for nice to be wrong in those things, to see things successful like that.
Yeah, and what about visitation numbers? I mean, you can't really look at occupancy rates because we got new hotel rooms along the way. But I mean, in terms of how many visitors we had back in 2000 as opposed to today.
Well, I think, you know, we were a little over 1 million skier days in 2000, and we've surpassed 2 million skier days. And so there's always been tremendous capacity that our mountains have. But the reality is that, you know, if you could spread them out over the days of the week, it'd be terrific. And now, you know, trying to manage skier days as a, you know, from a weekend standpoint is more challenging, I think, for the ski areas. But I think they're doing a great job of figuring out how to manage that. This winter is going to be really interesting because I think we're going to have lots of space on the mountain to ski. I think the numbers are going to be significantly down, but we may have different challenges when it comes to lifts and the speed and fewer people getting on a chair and how that, there might be bottlenecks at those areas, but I think once you get up on the top, I think you're going to probably have some of the best skiing that you've had in years.
Well, I was kind of thinking that, you know, just because, like you said, with the summer, I mean, people don't need to be in school, that we're going to see Monday looking like Saturday anymore.
We could. I mean, I wouldn't have suspected September would look like it did. And I think you're right. I think we could have people working differently. And I think, you know, we have family members that you know, haven't been back in an office since March, and they're traveling around and working remotely.
I also wanted to ask you, Park City Council last week did approve a one-year extension to Triple Count because of this year's cancellation of that. Some discussion that it's something that the council may not want to host anymore. Is that a good idea in your mind?
No, I don't think it is a good idea to do that. And I say that because it's still it's a piece of weekday business. Unless you have something to replace it with that's better, and if that's the case, but I don't think there is anything right now that anyone says, well, let's replace that piece of business with this piece of business. So I understand the dilemma when it comes to the city wanting to not have to subsidize these events in order to get the sales tax revenue. It is a different day, and I think we're in a position that we probably can negotiate differently on that. But those guys have been a long time piece of business in this community for well over 15 years. I don't know. I just don't think you're a little bit more cordial with your friends than that.
Yeah. Also, just wanted in the last couple minutes to note that, of course, you were recently inducted into the Utah Hall of Tourism, something I didn't really even know existed. So congratulations. So
Do you have
a plaque somewhere?
Yeah,
is there a hall somewhere?
I don't know if there is a hall somewhere, okay. But they call it the Hall of Fame. But it was a super honor, to even be considered in with names like, who've been inducted in the past, like Bob Wheaton and Stein Erickson and Craig Badami, and so it was definitely an honor. But I don't think there is a hallway or anything. They did give you this kind of acrylic plaque thing.
Nice. Well, yeah. Again, well deserved. I mean, in the induction piece that I read, it says that you have demonstrated a flexible and adaptive aptitude to new trends. I mean, what do you think we're referring to? Just kind of the whole nightly rental Airbnb?
No, I think more in terms of how you operate business today. I mean, we all have to stay up to speed. When I started here, I think we just had our website up for maybe a short period of time and just transitioning from a website that was basically a billboard to something that you manage on a per minute basis now and track and how you do your digital marketing and how those things have changed. And I think that's more from, we have positions on staff in marketing that did not exist. You didn't even know what that would have been 20 years ago. So I think that maybe was what they were referring to, is that we stayed technologically savvy.
Yeah. Well, again, congratulations on that. And again, a great run here in Park City as the CEO of the Chamber Bureau.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to Jennifer. I think she's going to do great work. I've known her for about a decade. She's done really good work down in Sedona. I think she's going to be really good for the organization and very responsive to the members.
Okay. And we'll see you around town, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bill, take care. Thank you. That's the outgoing CEO of the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau, Bill Malone. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. I'll be talking with Monty Roberts with the Utah DMV. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Utah Division of Motor Vehicles has made some changes to the way that it does business. On the phone with details, I have the director of the Utah DMV, Monty Roberts. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So what changes have been made?
Oh, goodness. Quite a few. Obviously, I think the biggest one that's most outwardly facing is the change to requiring appointments and the wearing of face masks, things like that. Obviously, the pandemic has required a lot of changes inside the office. We installed barriers to protect the staff and the public, procedures for checking employees before they come to work, cleaning, all those things I think that everybody's doing. So, and obviously the one that we're talking that needs to be talked about today is the discontinuance of the courtesy postcard reminders that people receive, remind people to renew their vehicles.
Okay, and I'm one of those who loves those postcards. I carry it around until I get it finally renewed. So no more babysitting here. Why are you discontinuing them?
It had been discussed behind closed doors for a number of years, but not really seriously. I think the biggest thing would be economics. With the pandemic issues, we and other state agencies across Utah and throughout the nation have been, in Utah specifically, we were asked to we had to make some budget cuts. So we weighed our options a lot. ultimately, it came down to whether or not we needed to continue to provide this courtesy notification to customers, or we had to think about cutting full-time employees that staff our offices to serve the public. Given that this is, number one, a courtesy, and number two, there's technology that can better serve the majority of people, we felt like it was a good move in the right direction to be good stewards of the taxpayer dollars, as well as not only for this year, but for years into the future. So really what it's about right now is trying to educate people, number one, that it's happened, and number two, how they can continue to receive a reminder via an email.
Okay, so how does somebody do that, get that email notification?
Honestly, it's really easy. You just need to go to our website at dnv.utah.gov, and right there on the front page, you'll see email renewal reminder. There's a little advertisement right in the middle of the screen that you can click on, and it'll walk you through the steps to do that.
Okay.
Right now, it is vehicle specific, so you do have to set it up per vehicle. I know for some people that's maybe not ideal, but once it's set up, it's set up, and you don't have to do it every single year. So
any idea?
You change your email.
How much money the state will save not mailing out the postcards?
For this fiscal year, it was going to save just under $1 million, roughly, between the counties and the state. We share the DMV duties with our local counties in some places, and so we share the burden of that expense. So, and that's just for 1 year. As registrations continue to increase each year with our population growth and things like that, and registrations going up, the cost, well, and with mailing costs, it only had the propensity to increase and not decrease. This way, we felt it was a better use of money, and our efforts are focused on trying to help people see the new way to do it. And move that direction. So,
any idea how many postcards never reached their destination? Did you get a lot returned to you?
You know, it's a tough. We don't have a good way to track that other than when we receive them in trays. My best estimation is anywhere from 15%, roughly 15 to 20% a month would get returned because people had moved or, you know, various other reasons. I'm sure why they don't get delivered. So it's just money that was wasted. And so, and you know, there's the chance that emails might not get delivered completely, but we're not wasting money by sending an email. But there's better uses for that money, especially right now, and given the current pandemic, that I think the state could use the money in better ways.
All right. And so the consequence of not registering your vehicle, you can get basically a warning that would turn into a ticket if you don't do it within a certain time?
I don't know what each circumstance would be different. Depends upon what somebody might be pulled over for. So I don't know that I can really speak on that issue. That would be, you know, based on the circumstances to why someone was pulled over.
All right. And so if you're... registration, just say, is due in September, and you don't get it done until December, perhaps. I mean, does it still renew for the September date?
It is. It does fall back to the September date. It's a 12-month cycle, even though you might register late.
Okay, so you're not going to be able to push it back time wise here.
No,
it's still year to year.
Requires it to be stayed on the same cycle, even if you register late.
All right. Hey, I want to just we did away with the state legislature did away with safety inspections on vehicles a couple of years ago. Have you seen any implications as a result of that?
Well, that's a loaded question, obviously. I'm not sure what you mean by implications.
Well, I don't know. I guess, again, it was one thing that, you know, I'd rather have the guy at the auto place tell me that my brake light is working rather than getting pulled
right.
over by a cop.
Right.
I mean, I just thought it was I still don't understand why they did away with it, but maybe it was just a money thing.
It could be. I think I'm probably not the best person to ask that question, because for us it was just it's kind of like emissions. I'm not over the emissions program. It's actually a county-operated program, and this is just an example. But emissions are a prerequisite to register your vehicle, depending upon the year that it's of the vehicle. So the safety was part of that registration process. That might be a better question for law enforcement or highway patrol.
Okay.
I would think.
And as we talk about vehicles, I mean, a lot of us think about cars, but so many other things need to be registered, right? I mean, boats, trailers,
yes.
RVs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all of those, again, would have to be set up per vehicle at dmv.utah.gov. And again, the postcards are not coming out. So when did they officially end?
The last month they were sent out was August. So September was the first month without them being sent out. And you are correct. They being that this is vehicle specific, anything that requires a registration would need to be set up if they want a reminder to come to their email.
Okay, Monty, anything else you want to mention?
I do. I just want to state that we are continuing to look for ways to improve, and for the changes that take place for the DMV, I would honestly suggest that you visit our website and make sure it is dmv.utah.gov. There are some websites that end in .org that are not not DMV sites. Ours always end in .gov, but that's the best place for us to communicate with people quickly. And as things continue to change with COVID and these types of things, that's the best place to see, do I really need to make a trip to the DMV or can I complete it online? So I think people will continue to move that direction. We're just asking people to help us, help them by going there first.
Okay. Monty, hey, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
You bet.
Monty Roberts is the director of the Utah Division of Motor Vehicles. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. One more time, again, set up your vehicle registration emails by going to dmv.utah.gov, G-O-V. Well, as we've reported, the ruling from 4th District Court Judge Jennifer Brown has cleared the way for Hideout's town council to decide about an annexation into Summit County and about a prospective development agreement with businessman Nate Brockbank. While the town council was scheduled to meet last night, technical glitches led them to bump the meeting to tonight at 7 p.m. Meanwhile, as KPCW's Rick Bruff reports, the town also responded to a statement from Summit County and Park City asking them to condemn the rhetoric of Brockbank's attorney, Bruce Baird.
The Hideout Council rescheduled their meeting to 7 p.m. on Friday night. The town's attorney, Polly McLean, said they wanted to be sure the public had access to the meeting. It will be available on YouTube. That also occurred a day after Park City and Summit County condemned Attorney Baird, saying that in one Hideout word session, he said about the town's opponents, quote, all those SOBs should have been taken out and shot. In a statement posted on their website, the town said it's clear that Baird was referring to people who were Zoom bombing and porn bombing during the town's meetings. The statement said they don't believe that Baird was in any way trying to incite violence. It added that he isn't their counsel, quote, and the town cannot choose who a developer may choose to hire. However, they said that Hideout doesn't in any way condone any unprofessional or incendiary comments or actions. The statement said the town is pursuing annexation in good faith and in accord with its legal rights. They said while that has caused many people to react in unfortunate ways, all sides in the controversy should react with professionalism, respect, and civility. Talking to us Thursday morning, Summit County Council member Kim Carson said that Baird had made incredibly offensive and very odd comments, such as stating that Hideout was able to get other parties to the regional planning table by, quote, holding a gun to their heads, unquote, with their proposed annexation.
In his meeting the other night, he used several references to guns, shooting people. I just can't imagine doing something like that, especially with everything that's going on nationwide right now. It was just very objectionable.
Why did you think it was important that the county and Park City issue this joint letter condemning Baird?
Because it was so offensive, and it was done repeatedly throughout the meeting. He also used foul language throughout it.
City-county statement said Baird may try to write off his comments as hyperbole, quote, resulting from on-air overindulgence during a live government meeting, unquote.
And it was just incredibly unprofessional.
Could he say in his defense that he wasn't actively threatening protesters, but rather those Zoom bombers, people who are actively sabotaging the public meetings?
Yeah, but there were other references besides that one reference. But he didn't clarify that either, Leslie. And there, from what I heard, he insinuated that those Zoom bombers and those that were protesting were all individuals from the neighboring area.
Carson said that she and Council Chairman Doug Clyde have had confidential discussions with Hideout. She couldn't say anything except that the talks have been productive.
Our goal was, number one, to build a relationship with them, and secondly, to talk about the challenges and the opportunities that surround the issues that they have right now. And so I would say from those two standpoints, it's been successful.
Carson, speaking to us before the judge's ruling, said if they lost in court, they would move forward, respond appropriately to any requests from the town, and continue to pursue regional planning.
We still have a lot to work with as far as transportation is concerned. So I would say that any regional partner is invited to the table to discuss that area. As far as other regional planning for them, it's going to be up to them to reach out to the required service providers. You know, there's a lot of questions around water and sewer service through JSSD. You know, if you take service from them and then you have water draining into another river drainage, there's issues there. So, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions that they'll need to work through.
Summit County Council member Kim Carson. For KPCW, I'm Rhett Brough.
And again, as we've reported, the town of Hideout now can move forward with a proposal to annex into Summit County. A ruling yesterday from 4th District Court Judge Jennifer Brown turned down Summit County's request to halt the plan or to find the town in contempt of court for its second attempt to annex land in the Richardson Flat area. The Hideout Town Council had passed a resolution of intent to annex in July, which brought the legal action from Summit County, including allegations that the town had violated the open meetings law that led to Judge Brown issuing a preliminary injunction against the town. But yesterday, she said she did not intend to preclude the town from making another attempt as long as a law is still in effect allowing Hideout to adversely annex into Summit County. That law, House Bill 359, was passed in the waning days of last spring's legislative session. Although it was repealed, or a portion of it, in special session this summer, that repeal does not take effect until Tuesday, October 20th. In her ruling, the judge acknowledged that there had been a lot of noise about what was intended with this repeal. Hideout advocates said the intent of the two-month window was to allow the town to try again, which they did by passing another resolution to annex September 10th. Summit County objected to that, citing the reported statements of legislators about their intentions. However, Judge Brown said she relied on the plain language of the law and said the legislature could have repealed House Bill 359 immediately if they want to. Asked by KPCW for a comment about the judge's ruling, Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson told us this is far, far from over. Newstime, 8:46. Well, the CEO of Voice of Utah Children made a presentation to the Park City Community Foundation a couple of weeks ago, pointing out the need for more early childhood education and child care. CEO Mo Hickey joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Mo.
Morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So what was this presentation made for?
Well, the Park City Community Foundation has been focusing on early child care for the Summit County area, and Voices were involved at the state level looking at our child care situation and how we would advocate and what policies are good to be put in place. So they invited me to speak at their gathering.
Yeah, so what are we supposed to do with this information?
Well, I think there are a number of things we have to look at. First and foremost, I think we have to look at the data and find out where we really are so that we can address the problem. So if you look at what's taking place both at the state level and in Summit County or Park City, we can hone it down to the zip codes. Basically, we wind up having the same problem. We're running at about a 50% shortage in the state in terms of active child care slots. So one of the things we're going to have to do at some point is we're going to have to look at the investment we're going to make in the early child care space. And whether that's a public or private solution can be determined by the locale. We're not advocating one or the other. We're just saying there are some best practices out there that people can look at. The other thing is we look at early child care from an economic standpoint. And early child care has to be defined better in Utah also. So right now, early child care basically falls into the 0 to 5 age, but it's disjointed. So 0 to 3 falls under child care at the Department of Workforce Services. four and five is kind of in no man's land because it's not part of the K-12 system and it's not part of the Office of Early Child Care. So one of the things we're advocating for is some kind of a comprehensive program for minimum 0 to 5.
Yeah, so whose problem is this, though? I mean, why is it the entire community? I mean, why isn't it, the people choosing to have kids and not, being at home to take care of them?
Well, it's a combination of factors. Number one, you look at a resort-based economy like Park City, and if we're paying people, if we're not paying people a living wage to come to work or to stay home with their families, that's the other thing. The big change in Utah over the past 5 years in particular, and we highlighted Utah County as an example, where Utah County 5 years ago had 68% of the families had one spouse at home taking care of the children, and that number has now climbed over 70% this year in the opposite direction, where both people are in the workforce. So it's an economic issue. We're seeing that during COVID. It's also, believe it or not, a gender issue. We've seen 20% of women who have been let go of jobs at the beginning of COVID not coming back in the workforce because they can't afford the child care that's available. So they are choosing to stay at home, but they're leaving the workforce and their families are struggling with lack of income on that side. The cost of child care in Utah now, an average cost for a year is over $10,000.
Oh, I know. It's like going to college. Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. It's actually higher than the average cost of a year of just pure tuition across the state for public college. So there are a number of different things we could look at. And like I said earlier, some of this could be a public-private partnership. And we really do have to bring in the work, the employers into the conversation. They're the ones that need the workforce coming to work. And unfortunately, like I said earlier, we are the same as the rest of the state, where we have about 50% less slots than we need for people that are actively coming in. The other thing is, it's from an economic standpoint, the recent studies that were done, I believe it's Stanford did the most recent one, and you get about an 8 to 1 return on the investment in childcare in terms of not needing services down the road with the children. So it's a good investment. We just have to come up with a practical platform that addresses the needs of, say, Park City, which may be different than the East Side, or it may be different than a place like Carbon County in terms of how we address the situation.
Yeah, so bringing employers online, I mean, doing something like what we've seen Park City School District do, right? They've got a pretty successful, it seems to me, child care program for their employees.
They do, and they also have a waiting list every year, which, that's something that we could address. We've looked at different models that have been successful around the country. One model I'd love for Summit County to look at, it's called the Brighton Center. It's in northwestern Kentucky, and of all places. But it's actually really interesting. What they do is they have an early childhood center, so they do child care and pre-K at the one location. But they do wraparound services. So, it's taking a bigger view. But in their case, they have Department of Workforce Service has a satellite office. And if we want to make it local, we could have the People's Health Clinic having a satellite office there. We could have iCenter. In Kentucky, they even have opioid treatment for parents, unfortunately, because that's such an issue down there. But they have a food pantry, so they really make it a one-stop place for the families. And it could be an interesting model for us to look at here.
Yeah, I'm just going to comment, though. I mean, we can't even get employers to provide health care for their employees. I mean, why would you think they would take on child care? I guess just to get the employees in the door, huh?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And, one of the things, and I will say there are some of the employers here in town that are part of the discussion with the Community Foundation and are playing an active role in it. So I do think there's an appetite for it. Also, the state, there was a bill 2 years ago to give tax credits for corporations that were investing in child care. new child care facilities. Unfortunately, it was watered down, like a lot of things happen, when the bill actually got through. So it really wasn't an economic motivator for corporations. So I think that that's another area we'd like to go back and relook at this session.
And as you mentioned, the cost of child care, I mean, basically $1,000 a month per kid. And yet we're paying child care workers, you know, 10, 11 bucks an hour. It just seems, who's getting all the money? I mean, why can't they get paid more?
Well, that's a great question. There are layers of costs that go into the child care facility. And, you know, some of them I think we could alleviate, again, by lifting not the restriction themselves, but the cost. So, for example, there's licensing fees, there's inspection fees. You know, the state of Utah, which collects a lot of these fees for the licensing and the inspection, really puts very little to no money, state money, into the child care system. Most of the Office of Early Child Care is funded by federal dollars. So one of the things that we'd like to see them do is, you know, if there's a child care facility, we could waive registration fees. We could waive licensing fees as long as they meet the requirements. So using good, solid technology to make sure the forms are filled out, to make sure that people are in compliance, that would alleviate some of the burden. But some of the costs are really safety factors. So you can only have a certain number of children per child care provider in a group setting. If they're below the age of one, for example, there's different layers depending on the age of the child. So some of them are really hard to overcome without some form of subsidy coming into the child care center.
So do we have a task force or some kind of committee kind of working on this to maybe flesh out that idea of some kind of larger child care center, or, you know, just to move forward with removing some of the restrictions or things like that?
There is. The Lieutenant Governor has an early child care commission that he chairs at the moment. I'm not sure who will be. I believe it'll probably be the next Lieutenant Governor would take it over. And I sit on that representing policy groups, I'm one of the people representing policy groups. But I think that's an area where we have to get past the theoretical stage of discussing it every time and actually start taking some more actions and running some pilot programs. Like I said, Voices, we went around the state last year on a county tour, and the one thing I came away really like firm in my beliefs is that every county is so different in the state and the needs are different. So we can't just say one size fits all, and we have to look and say, what are the needs? And, you know, the needs in West Valley City are very different than the needs in Park City. But what we have to do is start running some pilot programs based on best practices that we're seeing in other states that are dealing with the same problem, but they're coming up with solutions. For example, North Carolina, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area, has a great program that they've had in place for about 4 years. So we're looking at that. We're looking at an Oregon program. So I think there's really strong movement. And the culture has shifted, or the belief in what the culture is. So, like I said, 5 years ago, we would fight with the Eagle Forum that the mom is staying at home. And they were firm in their belief that every mom was staying at home and taking care of the children. But the data shows now that it's flipped totally the opposite, and it's only going to keep getting exasperated as the economy is weak.
Okay, I have just another minute, but I did want to ask you about the Utah Constitution. Amendment G is on our ballots this year. Yes vote supports allowing the Utah legislature to use funds from income taxes and property taxes to support children and individuals with a disability. A no vote would keep the status quo. So has Voices of Utah Children taken a stance on this?
Yes, we've taken a no. We're in opposition to the amendment. And it's for us, it's very simple. We would love to have an amendment that actually guaranteed more funding for education and the needs of children. The problem with this is the math doesn't add up for us. So if you take the guarantee of the income tax going towards education only, If you lift that and you merge, it's basically 1 + 1 = 3. So if you take the income tax fund and you merge it with the other tax base funds, we're not adding any new revenues. So something has to give at some point. So if, for and one of our problems in Utah, which is going to be a challenge for a number of years, is we add about 12,000 students per year to the system. We're just the youngest state in the country. That's a fact. So even though we've put in hundreds of millions of dollars over the past 6 years into public education, the problem is it's actually only covered the cost of growth. And one of the numbers we looked at, and it's, you know, we look at, like, show us what you've done in the past. So if you look at our pre-2009, 2008-2009 recession level funding for schools, we actually just got back to that level last year.
Okay.
So we're constantly playing catch-up, and the problem is if you fund growth and you fund inflation for education, then I don't know where the money comes from for disabled children or for the fact that we're, like we just talked about, we're 51st, last in the country in child care. We just had a huge increase in uninsured children in the state of Utah in the past 6 months.
Okay, Mo, I've got to leave it there. It's kind of interesting, though, that the Utah Education Association and State School Board is in favor of it, but we'll talk to them about it. It's Mo Hickey. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour, KPCW Park City.